From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of November 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us closer to the bottom of this half hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, the price of farmland in the Midwest is up 10% from a year earlier. The Commerce Department has reported an unexpected uptick in the U.S. economy, and Oil World is predicting China will import more soybeans this fiscal year than it did in the last fiscal year. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Tuesday afternoon, futures from the nearby December wheat contract at $6.42, down 3.5. The March at 6.80¾ for the soft red, down 3¾. July at 7.17¾, 2.5 cents lower. Hard red in Kansas City, a penny lower at $7.11½. From the corn pit, nearby December contract, $5.28½, a gain today, up 13¼. March at 5.43, up 13¾. The May at 5.50¾, up 13.5 cents. And July corn, $5.54½, up 13¾. Next year's December, $4.94¾, up 11½ cents for the day. January soybeans, $12.39, up 17½. The March at 12.46¼, 17½ cents higher. May futures, 17¼ higher at $12.46¼. And July, $12.48, up 17¼ cents. November beans at $11.49, up 14 cents. December bean meal up 7.10 at $3.40.70. December soybean oil at $49.22, up 4 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the December contract at $101.55, 62½ cents higher. February at $105.20, 2½, up 62½. January feeders at $117.80, 2½, 42½ cents higher. And December lean hogs today at $69.80, 2½ cents, up 42½ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures January contract, $81.40 a barrel, down 34 cents. Ethanol at $2.10¼, up 2¾ cents at that's 1.1% higher. Natural gas at $4.25½, down a penny and 6 cents. And the heating oil at $2.25¼, down 1¼ cents. Gold futures at $1,377.50, up $19.80 an ounce. And the Dow, now just about 150 points lower at 11,028. The dollar at 79.67 is up 0.99. The CRB index on the afternoon at 297.69. That's the Commodity Research Bureau index, up or rather down 0.33 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say this afternoon, sky should be sunny. Yeah, at the high near just 40 degrees. North-northwest winds at 9 to 13 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 17. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 27. North winds at 7 to 13. They'll become out of the east. Winds gusting to a high of 17. Wednesday showers likely, mainly afternoon. Mostly cloudy with a high of 44 degrees. Breezy east-southeast winds at 14 to 21. They'll gust to 32. A chance of precipitation is about 70% in Urbana-Champaign. And Wednesday night, showers likely, possible, a thunderstorm or two, cloudy, a low of 41 degrees. By the time we get to Thanksgiving Day, a chance of rain and snow, mostly cloudy, a high near 41. Breezy west-northwest winds between 16 and 20 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 31. Chance of precip on Thanksgiving Day is 30%. More with the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and speak with Don Day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana, is on the phone line today. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
All right. Good afternoon, Todd. I didn't like that talking about snow and blowing and that over the holiday here like that. I got too many Christmas lights to put up yet.
Yeah, it's the end of November, but December is just around the corner, and it gets colder from here, doesn't it?
It generally does, Todd.
You know, did it surprise you that the market managed to gain the losses back after being down so low earlier this morning?
I think the most amazing part of it was the dollar has rallied and as high as it's been here for a while. You know, we're up over 100 points, basis points in the dollar and still able to make the recovery in the corn and the beans today. I think that was probably the most amazing thing. We knew when we heard the news early this morning that North Korea was shelling parts of South Korea and people killed, that we would have some reaction in the dollar and the gold market today, Todd. And we knew that that would be hard on the open this morning. But we were somewhat amazed that the end users and some of the funds were returned as buyers and considered valued out to these lower levels and actually a new low for the move on that December corn.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and let's see, we have in corn the lead option at least. The harvest month and lead option, we have a nice little technical bounce. You and I don't usually talk much about tech, but we had a technical bounce, and we had a hookup day.
Yeah, I think it was a hook reversal up today. We made a new low for the move. We turned around, went higher, and closed higher on the day. We did not close higher. We did not make a higher high than yesterday, but we did have a higher close and a nice move up considering everything that's been going on and especially outside markets today.
And on the soybeans, we were not so terribly bad there either.
No, you know, up 17.5 cents after being down, closing 38 cents off their low is quite a move for the beans also. We have liquidated a lot of speculative positions over the last week here. We've reduced the open interest here, and I think that some end users finally sort of stepped into the ring today and said, hey, I don't mind buying a little bit. You know, historically, this is also generally a very good week. We generally rally into Thanksgiving during the week here, so you know, those two things going along with it and all the pressure and the oversold condition in the corn market did help us recover today. And so maybe we went back to a little bit of fundamental trading rather than just trading on the dollar.
Wheat futures were kind of drug along in the process. Did that surprise you that they didn't gain more?
I think there was probably a little bit of inter-commodity spreading, and I think that that wheat was not near as oversold as the corn and the beans were as far as the oversold condition. And I'm also thinking that as far as when we looked at things, it was the end users that helped pop the corn and the beans a little bit. You know, we're still talking tremendously strong buying by China on the beans, and we're talking some other end users popping in the corn. I think that the wheat market probably didn't have many actual end users in their buying today.
You think it's the livestock producer in booking some needs for the coming months that are
well, I know in my office there was some buyers by feed users that way. So, you know, we know that there was some of that going on here locally. I think that, you know, basically 99 cents off the high here and with all the projections of tight stocks coming into spring, I think that all over there was probably some ethanol plants and some livestock users here, let alone any foreign business we don't know about.
Now we get into the month of May, and sometimes producers either need money or they need to pay taxes, one of the two. Should they at this point? If they don't have to do one of those two things, do you think they should leave the bin door closed on corn and beans? And if they have to empty something out, what would you prefer to do?
Well, you know, like I say, we've been saying at this levels we sit on our hands. We figure that most farmers should have had enough sales that we made too early back in that $4 to $4.50 range, so they should have enough cash flow to be doing some of those things. And if they've sat on their grain and have some here, why, you know, they should have had some sales made. And if we're not wanting to borrow money to hold grain, but otherwise, if we're in good shape, well, we're probably sitting on our hands for right now.
Anything else we ought to talk about before I let you go for the day?
That's about it today, Todd.
Thank you very much. That is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report that happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Hey, don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. And if you can't get to the website and or listen to us on the radio, you can always dial this phone number. It's 217-333-3434. We post an update of either the opening or the closing numbers and a bit of analysis there at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He's bringing you the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, in its third quarter lender survey, the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank reports that good Midwest farmland appreciated 10% compared to a year earlier. In central Iowa's Ethanol Alley, good quality land jumped a whopping 17%. High quality land in Illinois averaged $8,000 per acre, the priciest in the survey. Average to below average Illinois land ran $5,200. Land southwest of Galesburg, Illinois, sold for $7,040 an acre, that on a 175.8-acre plot in July. The Commerce Department today says that the U.S. economy grew faster than previously estimated in the third quarter. Gross domestic product growth was revised up to an annualized rate of 2.5% from 2% as exports and consumer and government spending were stronger than initially thought. Consumer spending, which accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, grew at a 2.8% rate in the July-September period instead of 2.6%. Revisions to the third quarter GDP growth also reflected import growth that was not as big as initially thought, while exports were a bit stronger. That created a trade deficit that sliced off 1.76 percentage points from GDP growth instead of 2.01 percentage points. Australia on Monday moved closer to setting up a carbon offsets market that would reward steps by farmers, foresters, and landholders to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Land use, including agriculture, accounts for 23% of Australia's greenhouse gas emissions. The government released guidelines for the plan that it hopes would start ahead of a decision expected in about a year on a national price on carbon emissions aimed at pushing other sectors, such as power generators, to rein in their emissions. Oil World Today predicts that China's October 2010, September 2011 soybean imports will rise to 54.5 million tons from 50.3 million tons in 2009-2010, despite its move to cool its economy. But in the near future, Oil World says it expects a slowing down of Chinese soybean purchases as the record soybean imports in the past 3 months have resulted in a significant accumulation of stocks at Chinese ports. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, our listener opinion forum. Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus is here with a turkey tale.
Each year, Americans sit down to a traditional Thanksgiving feast. The traditional meat served is turkey. Did you ever wonder how the turkey gained its place of prominence on your Thanksgiving table? Here is a rendition of the Thanksgiving feast, according to some fact and fable. Now, we all have heard how the pilgrims hunted the wild bird. Did you know our forefathers' gunpowder was damp that day? They were hunting with bad ammunition. The pilgrims marched forward toward the woods with an Indian scout. The women all waved goodbye as the men left to go hunting, and the women stayed behind to prepare the table for the feast, trimmed with doilies, napkins, and bunting. The first Thanksgiving feast had to be done just right. It is a good thing women are blessed with women's intuition. The women did not know what their pilgrim husbands would bring home for the main dish, so they fixed foods that would go just as well with partridge, venison, or fish. The women created something called dressing made from bread that was a day old. Deep in the forest, the hunters were being harassed by the Indian scout, who mocked their hunting skills. Finally, one of them spotted an elk, took careful aim, pulled the trigger, and click. The pilgrims discovered damp gunpowder would not fire. The realization made them sick. The hunters were in no mood for jokes and were rather embarrassed. Just as an old tom turkey who heard the gobble jumped up, one of the pilgrims flung his musket into the field. The turkey's fate was sealed. What senses the turkey had left were knocked out of him that day. The turkey was plucked and stuffed and roasted. In exchange for his silence, the Indian scout was fed while the hunters exaggerated and boasted of their tale of hunting. The pilgrims truthfully did not fire a shot. They had no need for ammunition. That is why today we raise turkeys on farms. To shoot them would break the tradition. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give me a call at 217-333-9697.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Time to take our weekly look at the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien of K-State University is on the phone line with us today. Thanks so much for being with us, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And thank you for sending me a couple of papers to talk about. One of them produced by Iowa State University and Bruce Babcock, entitled Impact on Ethanol, Corn, and Livestock from Imminent U.S. Ethanol Policy Decisions. We've talked plenty of times on this program about the end of the year expiration of the tax credit and the tariff that ethanol has enjoyed for quite some time, and whether that will be extended by Congress either in the lame duck or the new session. Mr. Babcock took a look at it, and if we fast forward through some of the pages of his paper and get to kind of the chase, there's a table, table number 3, that says here's what the price of corn is if the mandate, the tax credit, and tariff are left in place. The mandate is the only thing that's left, and if there's no programs, what does it say?
Well, in general, Dr. Babcock's theme is that, that the impacts on U.S. corn and ethanol industries from not extending a tax credit in the import tariff would be modest. Of course, the Renewable Fuels Association takes a different view of that, and I think in trying to look through first what Bruce Babcock had put down, his indication is that if we leave the mandate tax credit for blenders and the tariff in place, that the corn price for 2011 would average about $5.21 a bushel, ethanol price is about $2.18, ethanol production about 13.22 billion gallons, and imported ethanol on about 90 million gallons. However, if the tax credit and tariff would expire then at the end of this year, and we only had the RFS, Renewable Fuel Standard mandate, you'd see about a 35-cent drop in corn prices down to about from 521 down to 486, ethanol prices dropping to about 205 from 218 per gallon. You'd see ethanol production dropping about 600 million gallons, and then but you would see an increase in imports of ethanol from Brazil, primarily of 120 million gallons. And then if you go with the total rescission approach, where the mandate, tax credit, and tariffs are all taken off forced off, expired on the one for tax credit tariffs, declared null and void for the RFS mandate, you'd see corn prices drop about $1.37 from 521 to 384. Ethanol prices dropped to $1.78 from 218. Ethanol production dropped down to about 10.9 billion gallons, and imports be really literally unchanged. So, you know, as we go through that, Todd, there are huge ramifications for different industries in these types of changes. If you're a corn user, other than ethanol, in the livestock feed industry, a corn exporter, et cetera, you'd probably applaud lower corn prices. However, if you're a corn producer, you're on the other side of that transaction. You're not quite so sure about that. So I guess when you try to weigh all this together and see the renewable fuel standard people have talked about, they are in agreement with what some of the findings from Dr. Babcock's paper, but in vehement disagreement with some others. Their idea is that in the short run, although the Iowa State paper maintains that that large increases in imports of ethanol from Brazil are unlikely, their idea is in the long run that if the U.S. does undo a number of these programs, that we'd see a pretty sizable expansion in Brazilian production, and we'd have a lot of imports coming in. And they have a number of other things that they talk about, I guess, as well.
Indeed, they do. I made note of a couple of paragraphs written by Bruce Babcock, and oftentimes the academics write paragraphs, but they just write the paragraph to spur discussion points. And so the idea here was that
we academics are guilty of that, I'm sure.
Yes, you are. I deal with a lot. Yeah, well, but that's what the academics are there for.
That's right.
Yeah, in part to spur thought. So one of them was that, if you let these expire, and I don't think he was dealing with the mandate at this point, although I read through this fairly quickly, that it would be ethanol that would float with the price of corn, and it would reduce volatility by ensuring usage, and so that the livestock industry wouldn't have to move in and out at the margin, but the ethanol industry could and should. Potentially, and I don't know what you think about that thought.
I think that this paper takes the idea that we would need to preserve stability of prices for the U.S. livestock industry to as a means of battling inflation at domestic food counters, things like that. And because following that train of thought with what you just said, Todd, if you would take away the RFS mandate and then let ethanol usage float, then Bruce's idea here is that we tend to see more stability in feed usage, and then when we did have extra supplies, the renewable fuel standard the ethanol industry would kick into play, and would use up extra corn until it was no longer profitable to do so, and in that process of kicking in and shutting off, we would see stability in corn prices. However, the renewable fuel standard people have a good point in counter to that ethanol plants aren't the type of a critter that you can just flick the switch on and off on. That there's a lot more challenges in it just starting up an ethanol plant on short notice. That if anything would lead to several months delays in trying to unmothball some of these facilities and get them back online. So it's sure an interesting point and counterpoint back and forth. And I think that we're having a strenuous debate on these issues.
We'll be back in just 2 minutes.
It's National Cashew Day. It's also Pope Clement I Day, patron of sailors and mariners. On this day in agricultural history in 1553, Prospero Alpini was born. An Italian physician and botanist, he is said to have introduced coffee and bananas to Europe and to have been the first to artificially fertilize date palms. In 1835, Henry Burden was granted the first U.S. patent for a horseshoe manufacturing machine. Incidentally, Burden made nearly all the horseshoes used by the Union cavalry during the Civil War. In 1883, Archibald Huntsman was born, a Canadian marine ecologist and zoologist. He was a pioneer of fisheries. While best known for his work on Atlantic salmon, he was a pioneer in the methods of packaging frozen fish fillets, which allowed the export of Canada's ocean fish. In 1894, Donald Deskey was born, an American industrial designer. He created the packaging for Tide laundry detergent, Prel shampoo, and Crest toothpaste. In 1921, President Harding signed the Willis-Campbell Act, which prohibited doctors from prescribing beer or liquor. And in 1945, wartime rationing ended in the United States. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm sorry I wasn't able to stay with Dan O'Brien that whole time, but we'll talk with him again in the future. You can always look up some of this information online. You're going to look for CARD policy briefs if you want to see what Bruce Babcock had to say about ethanol. And, of course, you can always visit the RFA's website. That's the Renewable Fuels Association website for their response to what Dr. Bob Babcock had to say. And I'll tell you what, I think we'll try to get hold of him, too, and maybe we'll put him on Commodity Week very shortly. In just a moment, we'll take a look at the ag weather. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon, Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is with us. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest first, please.
Well, we're about ready to undergo some changing weather conditions as we head into Thanksgiving week. We're going to be looking at some of the coldest air of the season coming out of the prairie provinces of Canada and sliding first into the Pacific Northwest and Rockies today, then into the Upper Plains states and Midwest tomorrow and on Thanksgiving Day. And it's going to be downright cold. Now, ahead of the system, there'll be areas of rain and shower activity, and that'll be good news for the Ohio Valley Tide. They're looking at some much-needed precipitation over many areas off to the east in the Ohio Valley where they could use it. But on the backside of the system, it is going to be getting sharply colder.
How cold are you talking about?
Well, we're looking at temperature readings in some areas of the upper Midwest that could be as cold as the single digits and teens for overnight lows as we get into Friday night and Saturday morning.
Oh, indeed, that is cold. Maybe we better talk about some warmer weather. How's the South American growing pattern setting up for the season?
Well, it's a little bit drier. The trend is a little drier in Argentina. Precipitation hasn't been bad. Pretty average, pretty good over many areas of Brazil. And temperatures down south of the equator haven't been far from normal. There's been no one that's been real hot. So far, temperatures have trended not far from normal, if not maybe just a little below.
And we're always concerned about wheat crop, especially because of the short crop in the northern hemisphere, at least in the Black Sea area. Can you check in on the Australian wheat crop for me?
Well, if we were to go over to there, we would find that most of Australia is looking at, I would say, somewhat of an average weather pattern. Now, precipitation is in the forecast for the wheat areas of Australia in the short term and even to the long term. So I would say that things are looking somewhat favorable, at least over the next 10 days in Australia, in terms of precipitation falling with temperatures averaging a little below normal.
Don, thank you very much.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And that wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Please do visit our website for all of our detailed information on the agricultural commodities, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report each and every business day, posted to willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.